Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the January 17, 2021 session, focusing on John chapter 1, verses 43 through 51. Follow me. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
So, I grew up in a small town in southern Arkansas. And I'm really curious, you may not have grown up in a small town, but did you ever live in a small town? Tell me about your small town experience.
Oh, I did. I was raised in a small town in Georgia.
Yes.
Waynesboro, Georgia. And we had, the way that I always describe it is we had a parade when McDonald's came to town.
Oh, you had a McDonald's?
Eventually.
Okay.
Yeah, it came eventually. Not when I moved there.
Uh-huh.
'Cause I moved there when I was in fourth grade. And we moved from Atlanta, so it really was quite a culture shock. But yeah, so I grew up in a very, very small town. There was one high school for the entire county.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you remember the population?
No, I don't. But it was, I mean, it was small. I can probably look it up.
Nikki, I'm curious, was there really a parade when McDonald's came in? Are you being
so that's what my memory is, and that's the story we tell, but it is a small town, so it is possible that it's been embellished, but it's been told so much, yeah. You know. But we were also my county made it on Jeopardy. And so the answer was Bird Dog Capital of the World. And the question was, what is Burke County? And I mean, true to small towns in rural areas, we had a bird dog, cemetery where all of the hunting dogs got tombstones and they all had phrases on it. Like, she was a good mama. He was a good hunter. Yes, there's a bird dog cemetery for all of the bird dogs.
Well, I just heard it all now.
So yes, I did. I grew up in a small town. We did have three stoplights when I got there.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe that's how you can measure the size of a town, is how many stoplights did they have. So.
Yep, that's a good way to do it.
What about y'all?
Well, you know, I always tell people I was born and raised in and around New Orleans, because I was born in New Orleans and we lived in New Orleans when I was little. But as I got older, like, you know, up to 10 years old, but first we lived in Metairie, which was a big suburb. Then we moved further out into a small town, which is where my high school was. Mm-hmm. And there was one street light in the whole everything. And there was no brand name chain anything.
Mm.
Right. So yeah, it's fun. And because we were close enough to New Orleans, I didn't think about, you know, that, but until I could get my driver's license. I mean,
yeah,
right.
Nothing. But everybody knew everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which was both the blessing and the curse.
Right.
Because everybody knew what was going on with everybody.
Right. And I mean,
no,
I was
hiding.
Same. And I was a PK. So yeah. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody kept their eye on me because I was the PK in town.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the city and had always lived in a large town or city until my first pastorate was in northeastern North Carolina in a small town, of Ahoskie. Which, if you Google Ahoskie, you come to this little town because it's the slogan or motto is "the only one." So,
that's awesome.
But lovely, beautiful people. We had a wonderful 10 years there. But yeah, that was by far the smallest place that I had ever lived. And if memory serves, 5,000 people or so, which was a small town for us. Mm.
Well, I grew up in southern Arkansas, a little town called Hampton, Arkansas. We were a one-stoplight town. They might have two or three now, but back then it was one, and the population was 3,500, and I was pretty sure that included the bird dogs.
and the Razorbacks, right?
Yes, although we had one school complex that had the elementary school here, and then you could walk right over here, and you were in the middle, or we called it junior high, mm-hmm. and then you the high school, and it was all one complex. And so I think we got there when I was in the fourth grade, and I graduated high school there. And yeah, the thing, there were two things that stood out about that small town. One was it was illegal to dance in the city limits. So we could not have a prom. We had to have a banquet instead. Oh. Because you couldn't dance in the city limits. And then the Man, other
y'all
could, was...
Y'all the inspiration for Footloose.
Uh-huh. That could be. And then the other was that we would get days out of school when deer season started. Because nobody was going to be in school anyway.
Yes.
So.
Yes. See, where I'm from, we got days out of school for Mardi Gras.
Okay.
Oh, nice. I grew up just south of Augusta. We made sure to line up our days off with the masters.
Okay. You know, you learn a lot about people when you learn where they're from.
It's true. I looked it up. Now, Waynesboro, where I grew up, has about 5,000 people. I think that when I lived there, it was like I wanted to say 3,500 people.
Uh-huh. Sounds like it.
So it was. I think that was probably about right. Yeah. That was what was in my head, but I was afraid I was remembering it wrong. But that's probably about right.
Well, we have a text here where a small town plays a role. So, Daniel, would you help us take a look at it?
Yeah, I'll be glad to. Now, in preparing for today, I could have sworn we dealt with this text recently. As I read this passage, Jesus calling his disciples, it all sounded familiar, like we had talked about this recently on the podcast. Indeed, exactly 1 year ago, the lectionary called us to study the first chapter of John. But it was the passage immediately preceding this one, and the two are pretty similar. Glad to know I'm not crazy after all. But in today's passage, Jesus is in Galilee. He's in the process of calling his disciples when he finds Philip and Nathanael. And Jesus' first word to Philip is, "Follow me." Now, he may have said some other things, like howdy or nice weather we're having, but John leaves that out and simply tells us that Jesus starts with, "Follow me." Ooh, an evangelism text. Boy, how did I get so lucky? I know, evangelism has gotten a bad reputation. For the many ways we have used and abused people in the name of faith. But Jesus seems to do it differently. His is a simple, follow me. I find that really interesting. Unlike so many forms of evangelism you see these days, Jesus doesn't begin with their wrongdoings, how wretched they are, how they are sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore. Very deeply stained within, sinking to rise no more. Jesus doesn't quiz Philip on reciting the Ten Commandments. He doesn't ask him to name the five books of the Pentateuch. He doesn't ask him if he can recite all the words to the doxology. He simply begins with an invitation to relationship. Follow me. And apparently Philip finds this encounter so transforming that he runs to tell Nathanael, I found him, the one who has been promised to us in Scripture. Now, Nathanael is initially skeptical. Can anything good come out of the small town of Nazareth? I know it's hard to capture tone, body language, and the like in the written word, but to me, Nathanael sounds a bit sarcastic, and I wouldn't have faulted Jesus for knocking him back a peg or two. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? But Jesus responds with another invitation. Just come and see. You know, I wish we in the church actually modeled our evangelism after Jesus. Because if we did, we'd recognize that Jesus isn't out to win converts. He's offering relationship. I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but one of my favorite movies in the last 10 years or so is a film called Saved. Have y'all seen that? Oh, man.
Yes.
Starring the singer and actor Mandy Moore. I know that dates me and also gives you an indication of my preferred style of music, but Mandy plays the character Hillary Fay, a popular girl in her Christian high school, and she's very much a religious fanatic. Her main goal in life is to find and hunt down anyone who's not, quote, down with God, and confront them with the fact that they are going to hell. Hillary's friend Mary is another girl in the school, and Mary becomes pregnant after only one encounter with her boyfriend. The way Mary's supposedly Christian friends treat her after they find out causes Mary to seriously question her faith. And Hillary's reaction to Mary is the worst. Hillary hatches a plan to kidnap Mary in order to perform an exorcism on her. Mary breaks free from Hillary, and in the film's most painful scene, Hillary says, "Mary, turn from Satan. Jesus loves you." Mary replies, "You don't know the first thing about love." Hillary says, "I am filled with Christ's love," and she throws her Bible at Mary, hitting her. Mary picks up the Bible and says, "Hillary, this is not a weapon." Evangelism is not about hitting someone with the Bible or arguing someone into faith. According to Jesus, evangelism is about extending an invitation to relationship. Come and see. Indeed, evangelism, sharing the good news, according to Jesus, is not about telling others what they must do. It's more about listening to the life and witness of another person, and then possibly sharing what God has done for you. I love how Madeline Lingle puts it. "We do not draw people to Christ by loudly discrediting what they believe or telling them how wrong they are and how right we are. We draw people to Christ by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their hearts to know the source of it." That's a little background on our text for today.
Daniel, thank you for that. And thank you for reminding us that the way many of us have experienced evangelism and the way many of us have done evangelism really doesn't have much to do with the way of Christ. Before we started recording, I was joking. We were talking about where we were going to go with this discussion, and I was joking about, well, when does the pizza and rock band come in? Because for many of us, that was the youth group evangelistic tool of the 70s and 80s, yep. You know? Yep. Come free pizza, loud rock music, and then an evangelist is going to guilt you into heaven. And, as I mentioned in the opening, I'm from around New Orleans. And Mardi Gras, when I was in high school, I went with some friends who were a part of an Assembly of God church. And they had a whole setup, a big, huge stage on a side street right off one of the main parade routes. And so they had all this band playing Christian rock music and an evangelist that was funny and all this stuff. And I thought it was a lot of fun when you're 16 years old. It's great fun. But then somebody stumbled off the main route and stumbled our way. And it was a kid about my age. Well, it looked about my age, but this kid looked like he had lived a rough life. And he was obviously drunk or intoxicated of some sort, and barely, literally stumbling down the way, but he was a frail, tiny stick of a person. And this huge, gigantic bodybuilding guy from this church where I was hanging out at this concert, right, grabs this kid by the shirt and gets him and shakes him and says, "Look at me, man, look at me. You see Jesus in these eyes?" And this little kid is scared to death, let alone drunk and feeble. He's been being shaken by a monster. And he just says, "Yes." And I remember thinking, okay, this is a, this has nothing to do with what Jesus is talking about. And at 16 years old, I just stood and watched as a scared to death kid wandered off instead of trying to help him. And the church wasn't trying to help him. And I just thought, but I knew then that there's something wrong with this. This is not what Jesus has in mind when he says, when others are saying, come and see, or when Jesus says, follow me.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bert. I think that's definitely not what Jesus was about. But I hear in what Daniel was describing, this call to relationship, this call to not follow this list of ways of doing things and believing and thinking and acting, but follow this person. And as I was trying to think back in my life, I don't think I'm unique in the sense that there have been people in my life that I was kind of a follower of, right? That they were mentors. They were somebody I looked up to that I thought, wow, there's something about this person. I would love to be like them. And so, you know, and you find yourself kind of emulating where you can that the ways that they do things. So for me, this was one of my professors in seminary who had an outsized influence on the way I saw my faith, on the way I saw teaching and learning in the church, and the way I saw ministry. And, you know, he was a mentor. And so I guess he never came up and said, follow me, but he inspired me to try to watch what he was doing and be like him. And I wonder if that was more in the spirit of what following Jesus might have felt like in the moment. I mean, obviously following Jesus is a bigger deal, but is it more like that? That we are inspired by, and it leads us to change the way we are because we want to be like them.
I mean, and I don't know, so maybe somewhat paradoxically, that kind of stands in stark contrast to what we often see as these glamorous stories of conversion by, you know, the big tent revival or the Billy Graham crusade or whatever, which, and I'm not knocking any of that because I know people maybe, you know, have had lives changed through that. But it strikes me as very different from Jesus's invitation to relationship when we set up shop, try to preach or guilt people into Jesus, and then move on to the next town. You know, when that strikes me as the opposite of what Jesus is doing here and saying, you know, not only do I have, you know, this wonderful faith to offer, but I want you to follow me so we can be in relationship and experience life together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this idea of like the big tent revival or the youth event that's trying to get all the kids saved, it's a little bit more about a moment than it is about a journey. And so, you know, and if you go to one of those, if you were ever at one of those youth concerts or whatever, you can get youth to do just about anything because, whoo, those emotions fly. And if you play just the right series of songs with just the right series of melodies, you can get youth to respond in all kinds of ways. And so that approach to evangelism is really about a moment, which I don't ever want to discount a moment because I think that we all have moments in our lives that we can like hang a nail on, right? That this is a moment when I realized this or I understood this or I came to realize that. But I do think that what Jesus was calling the disciples to, and so also calls us to, is a journey of relationship, as Daniel said. And it was this invitation to follow Jesus and learn to live the way that I live, learn to love people the way that I love people, learn to serve in the way that I serve, learn to sacrifice in the way that I sacrifice. I being Jesus, obviously, but it is this invitation to watch, to emulate, to try to be like. In very much the same way that our children try to be like us when they're little. You know, I think about finding my kids pretending to clean up the way that they've seen their mom cleaning up. Or I remember my mom, my daughter, when she was little, brought me this. She was looking on our bookshelf where I would often pull books that I would study from. And she brought me a minister's manual for funerals and asked me to read it to her. You know, it's because she was just, you know, because she was emulating me, right? Because she was trying to be like me. And that is what discipleship is about. It is that constant paying attention to the way that Jesus lived his life and trying to do the same thing in our own lives. Yeah, I think there's a difference between the moment and the journey. I will add that for people who have experienced one of those moments that we're, you know, that I'm kind of talking about here, I think it's harmful if it's not followed up with conversation about the journey. I think it can be hurtful if a person doesn't understand that the fullness of what they can experience through Christ comes from constant daily devotion, not something that just happens in a moment. I'll relate it quickly to marriage. It's the difference between the wedding and a marriage. If you only tend to the wedding that moment, but you don't put the energy into the marriage, then it's not going to last. It's not going to work. The attention has to be given to that daily, ongoing relationship.
I think you're exactly right, Nikki. And the image that comes to mind is we all love those mountaintop experiences, but life is not lived on the top of the mountain. Life is lived in the valley. And perhaps, you know, those mountaintop moments are not supposed to be in and of themselves the entirety of a Christian experience, but perhaps to see it positively might prepare us for life in the valley, which is where we live and love, mm-hmm. and experience the fullness of God with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we definitely know what bad evangelism feels like. We don't like to be manipulated, and we don't like to feel like we're being sold something, and that it's so transactional. All these ideas about a journey and about a commitment to a way of being and living in relationship with this one we follow, this person we follow, all that is richer in meaning. And I think trying to figure out, you know, how do I share my faith? I mean, I think we all believe that our faith is something that is beyond us, and we want others to be able to connect with a relationship with the same Christ that we know and follow. I have a friend here in Kentucky who lives in Louisville who he is convinced that we need to find a new way to talk about our faith and to share our faith. And when he says share your faith, he doesn't mean, you know, like a tract that you're going to follow it and you're going to outline your faith and share it with others. It really is a way of living. And to me, he's describing discipleship, but he's doing it in a way that makes sense and is easier for us to understand and grasp. He calls it the way of mission. And he actually has a website that he set up for it called The Way of Mission. And you can go to wayofmission.com. And it's really, he has four parts to it. One is grace for everyone, mission, a mission call to answer, that we have a mission to be on in this world, in the way we live out the call of Christ, that we have hope for the future. Hope in Christ, in the future that it's being shaped, and that we have choice in the matter. And he really describes it as a journey, and that basically as we are living this journey of grace and hope, that we hopefully are inspiring to others, that others are curious about this way of life and want to also be part of it. That's a different kind of thought about sharing faith, I think, than what we have experienced that can be harmful or hurtful even. And I want to believe there is that we can share our faith, and we are sharing our faith when we are good disciples, when we are good friends to someone else, and people see the goodness of that friendship. That's inspiring. People want to have and share that same experience. However, we end up deciding that we share our faith, I hope that we do find a way to not only answer the call to follow me, but also to welcome others who, however they enter that journey, also join it. I don't know. Any of y'all want to make comment about what I've described?
Other than saying I love Chris Sanders, no.
You know Chris.
Yeah.
He is a great guy. And part of the appeal of this, I think, is knowing Chris, because he's a labor attorney by career. But he spends, when he's not at church playing the guitar and singing, he is involved in Empower West, which is the group that is committed to get, it's like a ministerial alliance of a wide variety of churches and leaders and people of faith who just want to work on racial issues in Louisville. And he has been a key leader in that group for years. And so to see him, that's how he lives out his faith, is by trying to work on these racial issues. And to him, that is sharing his faith. Well, check it out at wayofmission.com. I'll give him a little plug there.
And I looked at it while you were talking. There's an app.
There is an app. That's right. And what he's trying to do, if you'll notice, he doesn't offer you a tract. There's a part of that where there are practices that he pushes
right,
out regularly.
That's what I was
thinking. Things to try,
at.
Things to practice to do, which is a different way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope we answer that call to follow, and that relationship changes us and how we live. May we be eager to share that also with others. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.